Argument next in case 141 on the original docket, Texas against New Mexico and Colorado. Mr. Liu?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, a consent decree requires consent. The proposed consent decree in this case, however, would dispose of the United States' claims without its consent. The decree would impose obligations on the United States without its consent. And the decree would bind the United States to an interpretation of the Rio Grande Compact that is contrary to the compact itself. For each of those reasons, the proposed decree should be rejected. I want to emphasize why the United States is here today. The compact apportions the water below Elephant Butte. The compact does so by incorporating and protecting the delivery of water by the Rio Grande Project to Mexico and to two irrigation districts, one in New Mexico and the other in Texas. The United States intervened in this case to enforce the compact's protection of the project. As New Mexico acknowledges, the compact imposes on New Mexico a duty not to interfere with the project's delivery of water. The United States claims that New Mexico is violating that duty by allowing too much groundwater pumping. 6 years ago, this Court upheld the United States' right to pursue those compact claims, recognizing that the United States has distinctively federal interests in protecting the supply and the allocation of project water. Those distinctively federal interests are why the United States is still here today. In the United States' view, the proposed decree fails to address the groundwater pumping that precipitated this suit in the first place. Instead, the proposed decree would allow that pumping to continue at unsustainable levels, and it would not stop that pumping from taking water from the project's beneficiaries, namely the two irrigation districts and Mexico. The proposed decree would thus fail to protect the project or the compact's apportionment, and that is why the United States could not give its consent to this proposed decree. I welcome the Court's question.
Mr. Liu, does the United States have a claim that's independent of the states?
Of course we do, Justice Thomas.
What is that claim?
That's the claim that we've brought since the beginning of this case. It's the claim that this Court held in 2018 is a claim that it's backed by distinctively federal interests. It's a claim that says New Mexico is violating its delivery obligation under the compact.
Is that a claim that we would normally look at in an original action, or is that a claim that could be vindicated in another forum?
It's not a claim that can be vindicated in another forum. I think it's actually a perfect fit for this Court's original jurisdiction because it is a claim arising under an interstate commerce that we have brought against another sovereign state. That's precisely the sort of disputes that I think this Court has long held is appropriate for this Court to arise to exercise original jurisdiction over.
You're an intervener. The U.S. is an intervener, right?
Correct.
When you intervened, I thought our understanding was that you were your interest was consistent with that of the state of Texas.
Yes, and to be clear, our underlying claims are exactly the same as they were.
Well, but Texas and New Mexico, and it's rare that we have the states who actually agree on anything. But Texas and New Mexico have agreed. So what? If your interest is the same as Texas's interest, then why are you still here?
No, I want to distinguish between two things. Our claims are the same.
Yeah.
The claims are the same, but our interests have always been different. I mean, that was the point of the 2018 decision. If our interests were the same, then, you know, that's basically what the state said 6 years ago. The United States has the same interests, so just let them remain as amicus in this case, supporting Texas.
Counsel, if I might just follow up on that. You're invoking the 2018 decision.
Right.
As I recall it, and I pulled it up because it didn't quite match what I thought I'd heard you say, we said that this case does not present the question whether the United States could initiate litigation to force a state to perform its obligations under the compact or expand the scope of an existing controversy between the states. We emphasize that it asserted its compact claims seeking substantially the same relief as Texas's without Texas's objection. That's no longer true. None of that's true anymore.
Well, I would respectfully disagree, Justice Gorsuch. I think we are pursuing the
seeking
same —
substantially the same relief as Texas? Then how come they're on the other side?
Well, I think if you look at the operative complaints in this case, the relief we're seeking here is the same as the relief that Texas is seeking. What's changed since the 2018 decision isn't a change in the nature of the claims. Our claims, Texas and the United States, are still pursuing the same claims. What's changed is a difference in litigating position. And I don't read the court's paragraph, that passage you just read, Justice Gorsuch, as suggesting that after having let the United States in the case, that the court was going to continue policing.
I got to say, you're making me regret that decision.
Well, no, Justice Gorsuch, I read that paragraph as standing for the
— The representation we had in 2018 was, we're just here because we help enforce the compact.
Yes.
And we have to administer the compact. And we are completely aligned with Texas. And that made sense. But you didn't have — I mean, you're not a party in the sense that you have some interest here other than in administering the compact. And at the end of the day, it's a compact between states that we're adjudicating here in an original action, right?
Yeah. Just two quick responses. I think back in 2018, the representation before this court was that the parties' litigating positions may well diverge as the case goes on, precisely because the United States has different interests than Texas. That's what New Mexico told the court, what Colorado did, what the United States told the court, and we've reiterated it at oral argument, but the interests were different.
Let's say we had denied you intervention, okay? You wouldn't have been a party to the litigation. Do you agree that your water deliveries under the compact, you'd have to make them pursuant to the consent decree?
If we hadn't intervened, no. I mean, I think even if we were —
The compact would bind you, wouldn't it?
Even if we were not a party, a consent decree cannot bind any third party, whether they're a formal party to the case or not. And that's just —
Well, you'd have your litigating — you'd have the opportunity to litigate that in federal court, federal district court, those claims, your arguments. But otherwise, the compact is the compact, right?
Yeah, I don't — Justice Gorsuch, I don't think that's
and,
the
— Under the Reclamation Act, your responsibility is to administer the compact.
That's correct. Under reclamation law, we have contracts with the two irrigation districts that are at issue in this case. And the problem with this consent decree is that it would impose obligations on us that are actually contrary to those downstream contracts. And so when this court said in 2018 that the compact implicitly incorporates, can be thought to implicitly incorporate the downstream contracts, that's a real problem, that the consent decree is —
Do you agree that the Reclamation Act requires you to follow state water law unless there's a clear congressional directive to the contrary?
That is correct. But I will say this. This consent decree is not state water law. This consent decree is an agreement between two states that they wish to have embodied in a federal judgment. And so Section 8 of the Reclamation Act has nothing to say about whether this consent decree can be imposed on the United States.
Mr. Liu, I think I need more facts to really know what to make of this case. I mean, you're here. The two water districts that get water from this compact are still on the United States' side.
Correct.
But Texas has given up the ghost, if you will.
Right.
Why? What has happened so that these different entities have diverged?
Right.
And what do you still want that Texas has decided is unnecessary?
Right. So here's what we want. We want the same thing we wanted in 2018 when this court approved our claim. So the easiest way to understand this is to break down the elements of our claim: duty, breach, remedy. With respect to duty, we want the court to recognize that New Mexico has a duty of non-interference with respect to the project. The problem with this consent decree is that instead of recognizing that duty of non-interference, it gives the states a right to interfere with the project by forcing water transfer.
Do you want the 1938 baseline?
We do. And that goes to the second element of breach. We came in, since this court's 2018 decision, have litigated alongside Texas all the way partway through a trial that the right baseline against which to measure New Mexico's interference was a 1938 baseline.
And do you
baseline.
Want this? Why? Because you think what will happen? Are your treaty obligations at stake? Are you just fearful that the water districts won't have the water that they need? What's the thought here? And again, what's your understanding of why you and Texas diverge?
Yes, it's our concerns here go to both the supply of project water and its allocation. We are concerned that the groundwater pumping is occurring at unsustainable levels, which will have a devastating effect over the long term on the supply of project water. And that will mean down the road that we might not have enough water to meet irrigation demands in the districts and in Mexico. We're also concerned about the allocation of water. And by that, I mean the allocation is currently accomplished through the downstream contracts that the government has entered into and the treaty with Mexico. What this consent decree does is replace that division of water with a division of the state's own making. As to why Texas has basically capitulated its position in this case, it was everyone agreed in its complaint. It was looking for a 1938 baseline when it filed the complaint in 2013. Why is it now given that up? Frankly, to the United States, it is inexplicable. But I think it only highlights the importance of the government's intervention in this case.
Well, if it's inexplicable, how much water has the federal government misallocated over the last 40 years? It hasn't used the 1938 baseline in decades.
The allocation of the water in the last 40 years has been pursuant to an operating agreement. But I think it's important to understand what that operating agreement addresses. That operating agreement doesn't address whether New Mexico is complying with the compact. New Mexico isn't even a party to the operating agreement, wasn't even in the room when the operating agreement was consummated.
Who in concrete terms is being hurt by this agreement? Which entities here or abroad object to it?
Well, we have entities right here in this court, the two irrigation districts.
And they're in Texas, right?
No, one is in New Mexico
Okay. And
one is in Texas.
All right. And so they are do you think they have a right to assert an interest that's inconsistent with that's asserted by their states?
They do, with respect to their relationship to the federal government. This court has long recognized that the parens patriae principle extends only to the state's representation of their own citizens with respect to state interests.
So that's what's involved? Is that what's involved? New Mexico and Texas are not treating these particular districts fairly.
I think that's part of the problem.
What else is What's the rest of the problem?
The other part of the problem is that the level of groundwater pumping at the D2 level is, in our view, unsustainable in the long term. And so the long-term viability of the project itself is at risk. I mean, when we talk about the districts, I want to spell out why we think they're being treated unfairly. I mean, the Reclamation Act of 1902 reflects a basic bargain between reclamation and irrigation districts. On the United States' end of the bargain, we promised to build the major infrastructure, the dams and the reservoirs, and to deliver water to meet irrigation needs in the districts. On the other end of the bargain, the districts agreed to pay construction, operation, and maintenance costs to defray the costs that the United States invested into the project. And what this consent decree does is just undermine that bargain, because what happens under the consent decree is that the district in New Mexico bears the brunt of any continued or increased pumping in New Mexico. What happens under the decree is if groundwater pumping remains the same or goes up, what New Mexico can choose to do is to force the United States to transfer water from the New Mexico district to Texas. And so what happens is the one district in New Mexico that actually has a contract with the United States, that has paid millions of dollars in construction charges and continues to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars each year in operation and maintenance, they bear the brunt of groundwater pumping. The ones who are entitled have to give up their water.
I've been a little bit confused by this case because, starting with Justice Gorsuch's question, I thought I remembered, and I now have a copy of the appendix. I think it's to your exception. On page 27A, compacts are agreements by the states, but they have to be consented to
by the United States, correct?
That's right.
And to the extent that you're arguing that this compact has been changed, whether you're right or wrong, that will have to be litigated, correct?
Right.
I don't know if you're right or wrong, but what you're saying is
so. Yeah.
This agreement is going to change the terms of the consent agreement. After a trial, maybe maybe we'll conclude you're right. But
right.
What you're saying right now is you can't change the terms of this agreement without us consenting.
Correct. It is just a basic application of the law that's governing consent decrees.
And so whether your claims or interests are the same as Justice Gorsuch or not, your claims are the same.
Our claims are the same.
Which is that this to the extent that the consent agreement required certain things, the parties have breached them. By consent, the parties can't forgive that.
Right.
Without you saying it's okay.
That's right.
I say you, I don't mean you personally. I mean I mean the government and whatever entity. This one was signed by the Assistant Secretary of the Interior, and I presume that's whom I don't know who you represent, actually, but you understand what I mean. It's the government.
Well, I think the compact itself was ratified by the states, approved by Congress, signed by the president. And under the compact clause, any new compact has to go through the same process. And under this compact—
Has to come to the government to say yes.
That's correct. And under this particular compact, it itself has a provision for amendment, which likewise requires the consent of Congress.
But I guess it's the consent of Congress, right? Not necessarily the executive branch, correct?
Well, it's the consent of Congress and the executive under the compact clause. The executive would also get to weigh in.
I mean, Justice Gorsuch's point is that you're just, adjudicating it. You're not the sort of consenting officer for the purpose of the compact. Is that right or no?
Right. What we're asking for in this case is simply a right to pursue our claims.
All right. So let me ask you about those claims. So what claim exactly? You say our claims are the same and our interests are different.
Correct.
So the claim is New Mexico is doing too much in terms of the groundwater.
Right.
What is the source of the different interests? It's the contracts, the downstream contracts, you say, right?
That's right.
The treaties.
That's right as well.
Yep. Is there anything else? I mean, is there federal law? Is it the fact that you administer the Reclamation Act? Is it that the United States is a sovereign?
Well, it's for the reasons that appear on this court's decision on pages 413 to 415, which is the compact is inextricably intertwined with the project's delivery of water. In fact, it is the project's delivery of water that accomplishes the compact's apportionment. It is the fact that the United States is legally responsible for that delivery of water under the downstream contracts.
Were those incorporated into the contract? We said, as a matter of this decision, that they are implicitly incorporated, right?
That's correct. And the reasoning behind that, I think, is pretty straightforward. The project predated the compact. The project was already in existence. And one of the fundamental purposes of the compact, and this is repeated at least three times in Texas's own complaint, one of the fundamental purposes of the compact was to protect the project, to make sure that the project had a sufficient supply of water to fulfill the United States' obligations under the contracts and the treaty. Again, it would have been strange for Congress and the president to approve a compact that failed to respect the obligations that the United States already had or that put them at risk.
So can I just shift you really quickly, because one of your arguments is disposing of the claims. The other is the impermissible imposition of duties on the United States. And you mentioned at one point that under this consent decree, the United States would have to do certain things.
Right.
Can you just say more about what those things are? Because I think part of their argument is that there really is no change in the status of the United States.
Yeah, all the changes go to the heart of the project's operations. I would first point you to the provisions of the consent decree — this is at the addendum to the third report, pages 12 to 17 — that would allow the states to force the United States to transfer water from one district to another at the state's direction.
That's already happening to some degree, but you're saying it's going to be different if the consent decree goes on.
It's going to be different in the important sense that we are allocating water as on a consensual basis between the United States and the two districts, as we always have since 1906, done so on a consensual basis. That's the meaning of a contract, on a consensual basis. And what this would do is force the United States to transfer water at certain times and places. And that just flips the project and the compact on their head, because the original design of both was that the determinants of how the allocation works would be the United States and the districts. Now what determines the allocation is what the states tell us the allocation should be.
Is there — and I think this goes back to Justice Thomas's original question, but is there another forum in which you can raise these arguments and get the remedy that you're seeking?
There's not. And to start with, to think about it in terms of sources of substantive law, as far as seeking the same relief under the compact, we don't read the consent decree, and no one else reads the consent decree, as allowing us to bring any compact claims that would call into question the validity of the decree. So we would be stuck with the decree's view of what is compliance with the compact.
That would be preclusive on the question of what the compact requires.
Exactly. I mean, the state's own reply in this court says the consent decree will be, quote, part of the constellation of laws that the United States will follow. I think that means that we have to treat the consent decree as if it were the compact itself. Now, thinking about other sources of law, there's state law, there's reclamation law. I don't think either of those bodies of law is going to somehow compensate for the loss of our compact claims. Those are claims not brought against New Mexico, but against individual water users. They are claims that hinge on a definition of project water. So, for example, under state law, I suppose we'd be in the position of arguing that project water has a certain definition that includes the water that's being taken away. But my guess is that if we were to try to litigate that in state court, the response from the other side would be, well, given that the compact doesn't protect that water under the consent decree, it's not really your water. And so we wouldn't have any basis for the state law, the reclamation law claims. Those claims rest on a concept of project water that would be undermined if we're stuck with what the consent decree says.
Justice Thomas?
Mr. Liu, if we had not gone along with the United States in your efforts to intervene in this, would you be able to vindicate those rights that you're talking about? Because I don't remember that the argument you're making now, of the sort of apocalyptic argument, being made in 2018.
No, I don't think those interest could be vindicated elsewhere for the reasons I gave Justice Kagan. I don't think the condition of this — I don't think what I've presented here is apocalyptic. It is simply a reflection of paragraph 14 of the United States' original complaint in this case, which lays out the fairly simple chain of causation that goes from groundwater being taken out of the ground, leading to less water in project storage, leading to less water for the beneficiaries of the project.
Well, and my memory could be somewhat vague on this. I thought that much of your argument before was that you were on the same page as, say, as Texas. And it seems like there's a divergence of interests now.
Well, there was always divergent interests. I mean, the parties themselves, we did, New Mexico, Colorado, pointed out that even though we were pursuing the same claims, we were doing so for different interests. In fact, the argument was, if we're just pursuing the same claims for the same interests, we should just be left to be amicus in this case. And whatever Texas decides to do with its claims, we would then be stuck with, just tagging along as amicus. But I understood the point of the court's decision to be, and this is on page 413, that the United States has distinctively federal interests, not interests that are merely derivative of Texas's. And I think in this case, we kind of have run a natural experiment of what happens when the United States' interests are cut out of the picture. The results are not good. The result is a consent decree that really does nothing to protect the project, that does not recognize a duty of non-interference with respect to the project, that does not reflect the baseline level of protection that existed for the project in 1938, and that instead of imposing an injunction on New Mexico to bring itself into compliance with the compact, actually requires and orders the United States to transfer water to accomplish the decree's aims.
You mentioned the baseline. Which baseline is being used now?
The baseline — there is no compact baseline that the parties have agreed on now. There is an operating agreement that the United States
uses. That's the one, yes. So what is that? Is that D2?
That is a D2 baseline, but I want to emphasize what that D2 baseline reflects. It reflects the United States and the two districts getting together and saying to each other, given the existing level of interference in New Mexico, how do we divide up the rest of the water? And so that agreement simply takes the world as it exists.
And how long have you been taking the world as it exists?
Well, the operating agreement itself has been in force since 2008.
No, I mean the D2 baseline.
The D2 baseline, we've probably since the 1980s. I think the 1980s is the right reference point.
So about 40 years. And the basically, adopting the D2 baseline is not a change from what you're doing now.
Well, it is a change, even according to the state's own briefs and their own experts, because they're not saying keep in place your D2 equation. They're saying, and this is at the addendum, page 44, you need to adopt a modified D2 equation. And that equation is going to require, if we have to modify the equation, it's going to change the operations of the project, not just numbers on some spreadsheet, but when we actually raise the gates at Elephant Butte Reservoir to let water through, at Caballo Dam, how long we let that water through. So, these changes go to the very heart of the downstream contracts that we've had for more than a century with the two districts.
Justice Alito, further?
Just to be, I'm clear in my mind. In 2018, Texas was articulating the same claims as you. You could not anticipate that they would abandon you
right.
In the middle of this litigation. You did anticipate, that's why you wanted to intervene, that there were distinct federal interests that needed to be protected.
Right.
And those interests remain the same.
Those interests remain the same. All that.
And your claims were based on those interests, and those haven't been litigated here. But they're being settled by the states.
They're being settled by the states.
All right.
Ms. Kagan? Justice Gorsuch?
Mr. Liu, I guess my concern, at bottom is this, that our original jurisdiction is for litigation between states. That's what our charge is from Article 3. And we have a consent decree between two states. They agree. The special masters found that agreement is consistent with their compact. And doesn't purport to settle any claims that the federal government might have. In fact, says those are not part of this case, dismissed without prejudice to being pursued in another forum. To now say that the federal government has independent litigating authority in cases that are supposed to be between two states and that not resolve the federal government's interests seems to me a dramatic expansion of this court's original jurisdiction. Not just in this case, but potentially with ramifications going forward. Thoughts?
Well, I think those concerns can be cashed out at this court's initial gatekeeping stage. Just so, in other words, those concerns can be cashed out when the court takes up the issue of whether the United States can intervene and pursue the claims.
That's kind of why you've made me regret that, because the representation then was we're fully aligned with one of the states here, and we can add material value in the understanding of the case. I get that. I do, sort of, still.
Well, I'm just going to dispute that.
But now you're saying you have independent claims that you want to pursue,
right?
Independent of any state, and that's not what our original jurisdiction's about.
Yeah, I think the court well understood in 2018 that a possible consequence of its decision was that the states and the United States, their positions might someday diverge.
And you're asking us to say that two states cannot resolve their disagreement in this court consistent with a compact so long as the United States objects. That's the upshot of what we're being asked to endorse.
I don't think that's quite right, because the United States is not standing in the way of the states
settling their own claims.
Well, they can settle their own claims so long as they do so consistent with the laws that govern consent
with the federal government's views, right?
No, I think this is
they can't settle their own claims anymore.
I think they could, and we gave an example in our briefs. Texas, for example, could agree to dismiss its claims, and in return, New Mexico could agree to either curtail the groundwater pumping or offset it. And if you look at the declaration by Hammond in the record, it lists a host of ways that New Mexico could offset the amount of groundwater pumping, and that sort of agreement, which is simply an agreement by New Mexico that says we're going to take care of groundwater pumping, doesn't dispose of the United States claims in this case or impose any obligations on the United States.
It's just one you prefer rather than the one that parties prefer.
Well, I think if we're thinking about who is imposing on who in this case, it's not the United States imposing on the states. It's actually the states imposing on us. And that's because we're leaving the states free to do what they want. They're the ones who are bringing us into this by saying we're not just withdrawing from the litigation. We're taking you with us, and on the way out, we're going to impose a host of obligations on you.
Thank you.
Justice Kavanaugh? Justice Barrett? Justice Jackson?
Just picking up where Justice Gorsuch left off, I guess I had not understood that all consent decrees are necessarily proper just because the parties agree to them. I thought in our firefighters case there were some limits, that you can't have a consent decree that disposes of intervenors' claims without their consent. So am I misreading that?
No, I think it's clear as day.
Is that what you're relying on in response to the notion that just because the states agree, the United States shouldn't be allowed to object, or that we have to necessarily approve this consent decree?
Yes, that's right, Justice Jackson.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Pettit?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. No one disputes that the Rio Grande Compact divides the river's waters 57% to New Mexico and 43% to Texas. But neither the compact nor the downstream contracts specify percent of what? The river as it existed in 1938, during the so-called D2 period, or something else entirely? This court has repeatedly admonished states to figure out such issues amongst themselves because, and I'm quoting from a different Texas against New Mexico, they are more likely to be wisely solved through cooperative study than in any court, however constituted. We heard you, we listened, and we complied. None of the three reasons the United States insist require Texas and New Mexico to nonetheless continue litigating holds water. Their objection that the compact, that the consent decree violates the compact, ignores that this court has encouraged states to clarify technical issues such as the baseline condition and accept that solution so long as it is reasonable and does not contradict the compact's expressed terms. We know the decree easily meets that standard because it merely tweaks a methodology the United States developed in the late 1970s. Their next objection collapses into the first because it is the compact that requires the United States to deliver and account for Texas's water. The decree merely allows the arrival of that water to be measured with greater precision. Finally, and this is the objection that has been the focus today, Their claims objection would transform this entire lawsuit from one about how much water the compact guarantees Texas to what New Mexico will do to meet that guarantee. Such disputes are not yet ripe, and more fundamentally, as Justice Gorsuch noted, under the Reclamation Act of 1902, they present complex issues of New Mexico state law that neither interest Texas nor belong in the first instance in this court. I welcome the court's questions.
Do we review consent decrees and original actions different from consent decrees in other cases?
I believe that's an open question, Your Honor, in the original jurisdiction context. But it does make sense because this court has said very specifically that its jurisdiction is narrow, that one would consider, as the special master did, whether, for example, the obligations or the type of obligations that would justify keeping a case in this court over the objection of the original states.
The special master seemed to have a different view of where the U.S. could vindicate its rights. It indicated that the U.S. could use another forum to do that. Do you have a view on that?
We agree with the special master that they can and should vindicate their current claims in New Mexico state or federal court.
Well, what do you say to what Mr. Liu just said? Mr. Liu said this is going to be preclusive as to what the compact means, what it requires, and there's no other way, no other body of law that's going to be able to get around that. So you effectively are precluding the government's position in this case.
It won't be preclusive in the sense of claim preclusion. It will resolve a single question, which is that the baseline against which the compact is judged. And we do agree that that would be binding on the United States. However, I would point this court to its 1935 decision in Nebraska against Wyoming, which, contrary to what my friend in the United States said, treats the United States as equivalent to all other appropriators for that purpose. The compact agreement is binding on them as a force of Congress's choice from starting from the 19th century that the federal law will defer to state law in this unique circumstance.
I'm sorry, but there's been no adjudication. There's a consent decree that fixes an answer, and you're saying the government is bound by that answer. It's different if they were permitted, as they're asking, to litigate that question and they lose it. Well, they've lost it. They're bound to that now. But you're saying something different. You're saying the compact settles that question. They're stuck with it.
Yes,
Your Honor. Isn't that you've given your whole case away?
No, Your Honor. The Nebraska case was also settled, and the court did not even allow the particular opinion I was citing was actually an opinion saying that the United States was not even a necessary party because under Congress's choice that they would be bound by state law.
But I think there are compacts, and then again, there are compacts. You know, there are compacts that really do involve only the states and don't have distinctively federal interests attached to them. And this compact is not that. And for all the reasons we gave 6 years ago, first, the compact is inextricably intertwined with the Rio Grande project and the downstream contracts, which, of course, are federal in nature. Second, the United States plays an integral role in the compact's operation. Third, a breach of the compact could jeopardize the federal government's ability to satisfy its treaty obligations. So this is a compact that really the federal government is right in the mix of, and that's why we allowed the federal government to participate.
Your Honor, I would agree that there is a spectrum of compacts, but this is not on the far end of it. In fact, the United States is an actual party to the Delaware Compact or the Delaware River Compact for precisely that concern. This falls more in the middle, and as in the Michael Sullivan Declaration, I believe, gives examples all over the West about areas where compacts use reclamation projects in the ways contemplated here. And it would be
well,
no
whether
difference.
This is on the extreme end or not, what I'm suggesting is that federal interests are just inextricably bound up in the operation and the rules respecting this compact. And for you to say you can, you know, once after we've said there are these distinctive federal interests and the U.S. gets to participate as an intervener, for you to cut the U.S. out of the picture entirely so that the U.S. can't ask a court to litigate those what it thinks are the right rules. I mean, I guess I don't see where that authority comes from.
For the right rules point, I believe my friend actually acknowledged that whether or not they were an intervener was irrelevant to that question. It either complies with the compact or it does not. And as to their specific claims, and I think this really goes to focusing on how their claims have actually evolved since 2018, because in 2018, they were asserting an interference with a treaty and an interference with Texas's apportionment. Here, the special master recognized that there is no evidence about a potential interference with the treaty at all, in part because this consent decree takes it right off the top. The treaty's not — so as a result, the treaty is not implicated. And then they're saying, well, I'm demanding on behalf of Texas more than Texas is demanding for itself. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And so what they've really tried to do here is they've tried to conflate the project and the consent and the compact, and they are two analytically separate things. What they're asserting here is an interference with a project in New Mexico that is a matter of reclamation law, and that is typically resolved in the lower courts.
I mean, you say they're two separate things, and 6 years ago we said they're inextricably intertwined.
In the sense that the project acted as a sort of agent, as I believe the words this court used, but not in the sense that every single violation of the project or every single potential interference with the project rises to the level of a compact violation. For example, if there were a well in New Mexico that was being operated in a way inconsistent with the project, that might be a violation under the Reclamation Act, but it's not going to be a violation of the compact. So they can't be — just because one serves as the agent of the other doesn't mean that they can't — that they are not analytically distinct.
This is a theoretical question about how it works, and maybe everybody else knows. But my understanding of how this works is you have compacts, and the federal interest is protected because of the requirement of congressional consent. But what happens as they go on? I mean, and you have a consent decree under the compact. But at what point does the federal government have the authority to step in, as they do when the compact is originally enacted?
In that instance, Your Honor, I think it would — and I'd point you to the Texas against New Mexico case that I originally quoted from 1983, where the court drew the line at where it is congressionally ratified powers. And this is to where it is a reasonable interpretation as opposed to an amendment to the compact. And here, what we have is a reasonable interpretation as to how the project is going to — how the compact is going to function on a day-to-day basis, because
the compact doesn't
specify.
How does — if, let's say, the Solicitor General representing the federal government disagrees with the idea that it's a reasonable interpretation, where do they get to have that question addressed?
This court addressed that in Vermont against New York, where the court said that it is not rubber-stamped consent decrees. It has the obligation to consider whether or not the consent — there's a modification of the compact. Here, the special master looked at every single objection that they have raised and determined that it was a reasonable interpretation, in part because it is the interpretation that, as my friend noted, both the United States and the two districts have agreed upon since the late 1970s.
So what happens the federal government says the problem here is they're not going to be able to meet their treaty obligations with Mexico. What if that happens? What — do you have any obligations at that point, or just tell the United States to, you know, go to war with Mexico?
I certainly wouldn't tell the United States to go to war with Mexico, Your Honor. I believe in those circumstances, because their claims, as they've articulated them today, and they have been a little fluid, is that New Mexico is pumping too much water. What they would do is bring a Reclamation Act claim in New Mexico. And they are actually a party to ongoing litigation along those lines in a stream adjudication that they've been trying to get out of for decades to precisely to determine their seniority and whether or not and how they were going to protect that.
So that would be your answer to the question I think was asked earlier about what should the United States do, and you would say they should sue New Mexico, or presumably they'll find you too, in not going to be state court, but in federal court, and that would be resolved there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask you, in such an action, wouldn't New Mexico point to the consent decree and say we're not doing the wrong thing because, let's say, we adopt or approve the consent decree? Wouldn't the defense be, here's the consent decree and it tells us how much water we can pump?
It depends on what precisely their allegations are, which is why these claims are not yet ripe. All the consent decree does is it specifies how much water New Mexico is entitled to. The treaty obligation is taken out before they ever get to that point.
But why isn't that the same thing? If New Mexico is saying, if the federal government's claim in the reclamation, hypothetical Reclamation mm-hmm. Act lawsuit is that New Mexico is taking too much water. Mm-hmm. And New Mexico's response is, no, we're not, because the consent decree tells us how much water we're entitled to. I guess I don't understand why that isn't — the consent decree doesn't impact the United States' claims.
And I think that I would point, Your Honor, to the explanation that they gave the special master in October and December of 2022 about what the nature of their claims are. And it's really it's not really a question of New Mexico as a whole taking too much water. It's particular New Mexicans, so people who are not project contract users who are pumping when they shouldn't be. That's the type of claim that would be appropriate.
But it can't be because we go back to your earlier concession. What this consent decree says is the 1938 baseline is not how you interpret this contract. Whether the special master will ultimately disagree with their position or not, if they are not able to litigate that the 1938 baseline is what needs to be measured, then the pumping would be illegal. If the baseline has been changed, then the pumping is going to be from a different baseline. And so their reclamation claims are being limited. The extent of how much they can get is being limited by you.
Your Honor, I have two responses. The first is that the United States has not actually attempted to litigate a 1938 condition in this case. In fact, the special master, and this is his words, not mine, on page 71 of the February 6, 2023 transcript, I don't know how the U.S. is maintaining that with a straight face. Because as recently as the summary judgment motion, they disclaimed a 1938 baseline. Beyond that, the type of pumping that they are talking about and the concerns they are saying, and one of the reasons they raised that it was unfair, was that EBID, the district in New Mexico, was going to bear the brunt for people outside of that area, so people farther upstream. That is the nature of the claims they are trying to litigate now.
Well, we'll see. They'll have to get up and answer that because I can't, but we'll see.
Can I just direct your attention to the other objection? Because on the one hand, they say part of the reason this is a problem is that you are disposing of our claims. I also understood them to say you are imposing obligations. So I guess my question is, to what extent do you see the consent decree as binding on the United States?
It's not binding in the sense of that we can seek contempt for violating it. It is binding, as we were discussing a few minutes ago, as to the definition of the baseline. The obligations that they are pointing to
— You could finish your answer.
Are three specific concerns. One is the gauge, which is actually contemplated by the compact itself in Article 2 and Article 5, that we can move gauges. The second is an accounting issue that falls within the scope of the accounting that already happens, because what's accounting that's talking about here is not the day-to-day operation of the project. It is an end-of-the-year assessment about whether the compact has been violated. They're two different things. And the third is a transfer of allotments between districts over at the end of the beginning of each year. That would be enforced against the districts.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Pettit. Mr. Liu said it was inexplicable why you gave up the 1938 baseline. Can you explain that?
Certainly, Your Honor. The nature of a settlement is that parties compromise, and the special master determined at the summary judgment stage that there wasn't a strict 1938 condition as Texas originally pled it. There was some additional amount of development that had been contemplated. And we accepted that as a fundamental matter, and going forward, looking at the evidence and looking at the different claims, we concluded that this was in Texas's best interest.
Thank you. Justice Thomas?
This may be along the same line, but the language in Justice Gorsuch's opinion in the 2018 case He says, after we permitted the U.S. to intervene, it also filed a complaint with allegations that parallels Texas. Now it appears that you've diverged. Could you explain why that happened and on what basis did this happen? The U.S. seems to put quite a bit of emphasis on that.
Two responses. The first is, going back to 2018, ironically, General Keller, when he was standing at this lectern, predicted that there would be a divergence about the baseline, but he got the positions backwards. He was asserting that Texas would be asserting a 1938 condition and the U.S. would be asserting a D-2. And that's actually how it's been litigated up until the exceptions. So that's changed. The other thing that's changed is, again, they're trying to bring into this lawsuit intrastate issues within New Mexico that Texas actually never agreed to, that were appropriately part of its lawsuit back in 2018.
Justice Alito?
Who decided how to do the accounting before the consent decree? Who set up that process?
There are two different processes. One is run by the Rio Grande Compact Commission, that is the compact compliance, and the other is the accounting process for the project itself. And those run in parallel. They only really meet at the end, at basically an end-of-the-year meeting, where Texas and New Mexico, as well as Colorado, would be telling them there's a credit or a debit that needs to be put into your accounting system. And it's functionally the same thing.
But who set up what would be reported or how?
So
the two projects, not the states, correct?
They are. This is cooperative federalism. They work together about this, and they work together on an ongoing basis.
The problem is that now you're directing the federal government to do something different, whether it's de minimis or not. I can't even figure that out in reading the materials. But when we had the opposite situation of the federal one sovereign, the federal government telling the states to do background checks on gun buyers, we said that's stepping into their sovereign decision-making and couldn't. I don't know why this is not the same in reverse, that you're commanding the federal government to do something that it had not done previously. So where do you get the power to do that? You claim the power is because they've undertaken the duty to do this, but they took a duty to do this, retaining the right to make certain decisions. Now you're chasing that baseline.
The Reclamation Act of 1902 stated that the states can put the federal government takes its water rights subject to both the procedural and substantive requirements of the states, and that can include, for example, in United States against California in 1978, some really, really nitpicky, like 25 different conditions micromanaging, and that is something that Congress has allowed for here. Here, it's just a discussion about its slightly different numbers in a larger accounting process that's already existed.
Jessica? Justice Gorsuch?
Let me just see if I've got it right. So we have a consent decree that we have to approve or disapprove. And the big change is the baseline. That's been the big subject of dispute. And that's what the government says it's most worried about.
Yes,
but it's the same baseline that's been used for 40 years.
Yes, Your Honor. Ever since the project went from delivering at individual farms to delivering at a district level, it's used the same baseline.
And the other concern that we've heard mentioned is the treaty, but the special master found that there's no treaty problem here.
Yes, the special master found there's not even a serious argument there's a treaty problem.
Might be different in terms of approving a consent decree if there were a treaty problem.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the other set of issues has to do with administration, where the water gauge is going to be. And you're getting a benefit out of this deal because instead of the water gauge being at Elephant Butte, I don't know how many miles, over 100 miles from the border, you're getting a measure now at the Texas border.
I tweaked that just a little. The gauge that's at Elephant Butte is still at Elephant Butte.
Yeah, no.
We're getting a separate — the gauge that we are — is being in El Paso is had been gauges that had been canal headings within Texas, but we are measuring at Texas. What we are getting, we are definitely getting a benefit in the sense that the project is now considering and freezing and the 1978 level, the the pumping that had been happening. And I do want to point out that that is requiring New Mexico to reduce pumping to get down to 1978, and I think they've already spent something like $60 million on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Justice Kavanaugh?
So do you dispute that the downstream contracts are still in effect and bind the United States with respect to the allotment and their obligations with regarding that?
We don't dispute it, but under Hinderleiter, the contractor's rights rise no higher than the state's. And so if Texas only gives them 43 out of 100 gallons, the Texas district can't claim that.
I understand, but the contracts do talk about their transfer obligations as between EBID and EP1, right?
No, Your Honor.
They
The 1938 contracts that are incorporated into the compact do not discuss a transfer obligation. That is something that the United States came up with in 2008 without the compacting states whose rights are at issue even being in the room, as my colleague
said. Final question. If the United States decides not to transfer water pursuant to the consent decree, let's say it goes through, you mentioned earlier that that would be enforced against the states and not the United States. In other words, you're not binding them necessarily legally. Is that your position?
The districts, yes. That would be enforced.
Would be enforced, excuse me, against the districts. Is that in the compact or in the consent decree? Is that just something you're saying here now?
That's not specifically in the consent decree. That is, however, the way that the transfers work is, to take a specific example, if a negative departure transfer were triggered, that would mean over a period of years, EBID, the New Mexico district, has received far, far more water than it was entitled to. And that would be transferred to Texas or the Texas district as a way of a remedy. If the EBID were to continue to take more water than it was entitled to even after that, that would be enforced through a New Mexico state administrative process that's part of the larger constellation of laws that my friend mentioned. It's not specifically in the consent decree.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Wexler?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The question of whether the United States can veto the settlement of the compacting states can be resolved by the application of four principles. First, the distinctively federal interests of the United States do not include an interest in the equitable apportionment of Rio Grande water. That is undisputed. Because the only issue resolved by the consent decree is the equitable apportionment, the United States' interests are not implicated. Second, the compact establishes the apportionment. The Rio Grande project must then conform its operations to ensure that the compact apportionment is delivered. Third, this Court has recognized the right of states to clarify an ambiguity in an interstate compact so long as the clarification is consistent with the compact. Here, the consent decree measures Texas's share of the Article IV delivery in a manner that is expressly contemplated by the compact. And fourth, there are other available fora for the United States to resolve its remaining claims. The special master observed that, quote, it is difficult to envision a resolution to this matter that might be superior to the consent decree. The Court should overrule the United States exception and enter the consent decree. I welcome the Court's questions.
Could you, the United States seemed to suggest that Texas and the states have changed their views from 2018, and we've had some discussion of that. I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Well, New Mexico has been consistent about its position in terms of the D2 baseline. What we understood the 2018 decision to be doing is essentially saying Texas had a claim to the apportionment. That is an interstate apportionment as between Texas and New Mexico. Only those states are in the compact itself. And what the United States had brought was a claim for interference. That is, this Court said that there were obligations that arose under the compact and that it had a claim to be free from interference with those duties and obligations. The consent decree doesn't address that interference claim. All it does is define what the equitable apportionment is as between Texas and New Mexico. And the United States is free to bring, as the special master indicated in his third report, they're free to bring all of those claims of interference in other fora. And that would be consistent with the way this Court has handled other cases.
What is the nature of the disagreement about the groundwater pumping?
So I would understand that to be Texas and New Mexico have resolved the apportionment, the amount of water that each state is entitled to. What the United States is really arguing about is how does New Mexico satisfy its obligations? That is, which specific water users within New Mexico must shut down wells, how New Mexico should be administering water, and those sorts of intrastate issues that this court has held are purely intramural disputes between competing water users within the state. And in other cases where there are those sorts of competing uses for between interstate users, the court has sent the case back to those to the state. So, for example, in the case of United States versus Nevada, once the interstate matter was resolved as between California and Nevada, the case this court said, well, the remaining claims can be resolved within the state of Nevada because it only has to do with competing interests of Nevada water users.
So, you would send the United States to presumably federal court in New Mexico to sort out the concerns they have and would prefer to raise here.
That's correct, Your Honor. For any reclamation claims, those would be in federal district court in New Mexico. As to the definition of project rights, that's a New Mexico State Adjudication Court matter pursuant to the McCarran Act amendment and the Reclamation Act that Justice Gorsuch referred to earlier.
And is it possible that the New Mexico courts would issue decisions concerning the allocation of water that would be contrary to the consent decree?
No, we think the consent decree only resolves the issue of the interstate apportionment. And to Justice Jackson's question earlier, the remaining questions about depletions within the state of New Mexico, how New Mexico water users could be done, for example, protection of the treaty, all of those claims would be available to the United States, as the special master indicated, in the lower fora.
And it wouldn't
but
be the
case.
But
they're bound against arguing that they New Mexico has to use a 1938 baseline, correct?
No, I don't think that's right, Justice
Sotomayor. Well, that's what your co-counsel said.
Well, I don't think that's not how I understood my co-counsel. What has a preclusive effect is the apportionment itself. So the baseline would apply as to the amount of water that Texas is entitled to receive. What it doesn't preclude the United States from arguing, which is really their argument here, is how should the project operate? How can the project be free from interference from New Mexico water users? And that really is a question of how does New Mexico use its share of the apportionment? And that question they could raise, they could seek to limit depletions all the way back to their priority date, which is, I believe, a 1903 priority date. And so they would have the ability to protect their project from groundwater depletions. So the only thing really here is being resolved is the equitable apportionment as between the two
states.
But
why aren't these all connected? I mean, you seem to be drawing the line between arguments that the United States can make related to internal use of the water by New Mexico, but not the apportionment as between states. And maybe I'm confused, but I thought this is one water system that works its way all the way down. And so to the extent that New Mexico is taking too much internally to New Mexico or not allowing it to continue on to the dam, doesn't that affect ultimately the project, et cetera? I mean, how can you separate these two out in the way that you are?
Well, I think it's just a matter of understanding what the hierarchy here is. So as the special master indicated, in cases like Hinderleiter, California versus United States, the court has established that the compact, the apportionment as between the two states is established by the compact itself, not the operation of the project. And once that apportionment is set, now the project must operate within that apportionment. And so the amounts that the districts are entitled to, for example, the New Mexico district, that amount, to use the language from Nebraska versus Wyoming, can rise no higher than New Mexico's apportionment itself. To the extent that the project or the United States has a claim concerned about, like, are there New Mexico water users taking water, that is purely an interstate matter. It's a matter of how is the New Mexico apportionment being used. And that's a matter that this court has held, and the special master also is recommending, that those questions can be resolved in the lower courts, courts that are more appropriate or more used to addressing questions of having to do with New Mexico water administration, New Mexico water use, which New Mexico water users should be shut down, how to reduce depletions.
Let's see if I've got it. The gist of this compact is that 43% of what's in Elephant Butte has to go to Texas using the D2 baseline.
That's
the gist of it. Now, if New Mexico water users are interfering with a federal reclamation project, that's a different question. And the Reclamation Act says that gets resolved according to state law internally, intramurally in New Mexico.
Yes, that's exactly right, Justice Gorsuch. And all the consent decree does is define more precisely what was determined in the compact in 1938 that Congress consented to, and that is the project must be operated in a manner that the equitable apportionment is delivered. That is, the 43% that is Texas is entitled to actually arrives at the border in Texas, because, of course, otherwise they have no ability to enjoy it. And all the consent decree does is provide a way to measure and enforce Texas's share of that Article 4 delivery, and it does so in a manner that is expressly contemplated by the compact in Articles 2 and 12.
You have nothing further, Justice Thomas? Justice Kavanaugh? No?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal, Mr. Liu?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Just four quick points. First, I think I heard my friend from Texas acknowledge that the consent decree would be binding on the United States with respect to its claims in this case. I think that's just game over under the firefighters' decision, which couldn't be clearer that a consent decree can't extinguish the claims of a non-consenting intervener. Second, on the nature of the United States claims, Justice Jackson, I think you're exactly right. My friend's attempt to kind of divide these claims into an intrastate portion or an interstate portion just doesn't make any sense, given what this court has already said about how this water system works. The project is intertwined with the compact, and we have been here all along protecting the project's delivery of water to the districts and Mexico. That delivery of water is the compact's apportionment. So insofar as we are trying to enforce the protection of that delivery of water, we are trying to enforce the compact's apportionment as it is specified. I think the clearest way to appreciate this point, that our claims are the parallel to the compact claims that have been in this case in the beginning, is to just look at Texas's complaint. On page 16 of its complaint in this case, it asks for an injunction that would command New Mexico to stop interfering and impeding the authority of the Rio Grande project. That's Exhibit A for why there's no way to untangle the project's delivery of water from the compact's apportionment. They're both the same thing. My friend from New Mexico said, well, the United States will be free to argue about whether certain users in New Mexico are properly divvying up New Mexico's share under the consent decree. But our entire claim in this case is about the definition of the share itself. It's not about how people in New Mexico should divide up the eventual share. It's about the delivery of water to the two irrigation districts and Mexico, and it's not about the intrastate issue. Third, on the obligations. My friend from Texas wanted to characterize the obligations that this consent decree would impose as minor obligations. As an initial matter under firefighters, that just doesn't matter. I mean, this is just contracts 101. Two people cannot contract together and impose any obligations on a non-consenting third party. There's no exception to that rule in this court's original jurisdiction docket. In fact, I would have thought that it's in this scenario that rule is most important, because the United States is not standing here before you as an ordinary litigant. We are the federal sovereign. And so in addition to the rule on firefighters, there are rules about sovereign immunity, intergovernmental immunity. All these rules protect the federal government from being what is essentially a direct regulation by the states. And the last point I'll make is about this idea that the states can just come together and resolve ambiguities in the compact and then impose them on the United States. This just conflates the consent decree with the compact. The whole point of firefighters was that states, by their mere consent, cannot impose on non-consenting parties their view of the law. Rather, that view of the law has to be litigated on the merits by the non-consenting party. And so for all those reasons, we would ask this court to deny the state's motion to enter the proposed consent decree.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.